They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roll the Lions UK podcast, episode 235, Love Bites, But So Do I. My name's Matthew Turner, alongside Stephen Collins, Ashley Soden. How you doing, boys?
Good. Not good.
I mean, what a disappointing... I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. No, I am mad, because I've seen this coming. This has been coming for weeks. This has been coming since the Tampa Bay game.
Okay, and we're going to get into that right now. Of course, this is Packers at Lions review show. We're going to get straight into it because there is no news to go through. However, just a preamble, as you normally do, please come and join us on our Discord channel. It's a great place, win or lose, to celebrate or commiserate. Links in the chat right now. College Football Podcast is not quite yet up on YouTube and Twitch. If Ant sends me the actual file, I'll get it uploaded ASAP. But you can listen to it on the audio podcast on wherever you get podcasts. So if you want to listen to that, you should be able to listen to it there, I hope. I hope it's been uploaded. But anyway, that should be coming up very shortly, if not already. Please don't forget to like the shows, up to the podcast, all that good stuff, and add Lions Nation Unite on their Facebook group. We are Twitch affiliated, YouTube monetized, tip jar down below. If you're enjoying what you're listening to, want to show some love that way, appreciate that very much. And there's a feedback form as well. If you've got any suggestions for improving the show, would love you to hit the feedback form and I'll pick that up and have a look. Finally, the merch store, as you can see, if you are on YouTube and Twitch, is alive and well. Steve's demoing the mug, which actually looks fairly hefty. Ash has got the sweatshirt on. Is that on T-shirt?
T-shirt underneath the sweater. Yeah.
Me and Steve both got the hoodies on, which are surprisingly fleecy, actually. Like, I went out today in just the hoodie without a coat on, and it's, I mean, 50 degrees at the moment, Fahrenheit, or so, 52, and no coat, and I was pretty toasty. So go and check out the store. Link, again, is in the chat right now. Okay, let's crack on with this. Green Bay 29, Lions 22. Statistically, let's just give you a brief overview. Love 22 of 32 for 268 and three touchdowns. On the ground, not so much for them. AJ Dillon 14 of 43 led the way. Jordan Love did himself pull off a 37-yard run, but they did only get 109 overall. Receiving, Christian Watson led the way with 5 of 7 for 94 and a touchdown. Two other receiving touchdowns in there. Jaden Reed was 4 of 8 for 34 and Tucker Graft 2 of 2 for 15. But the star for me on the Green Bay side was Malik Heath, who really came to play. 4 of 4 for 46. It's only 46 yards, but they were some really big plays he came up with. Lions on offense, Jared Goff 29 of 44, 332 and two touchdowns, also three fumbles. On the ground, the Lions went for 140 total, led by David Montgomery, 15 of 71 and a touchdown. Jahmyr Gibbs had 11 for 54. They were basically at 5 yards a carry on the ground, which is just horrid to say, considering what happened. And receiving the ball, Amon-Ra led the team, 9 of 11 for 95. And Khalif Raymond went 5 of 5 for 90. J-Mo did pitch in, to his credit, 2 of 3 for 51. Sam Laporte, 5 of 8 for 47. Sam Laporte also had a touchdown, and Josh Reynolds 2 of 4 for 15, and that late touchdown to bring it within a score. The three fumbles I mentioned from Jared Goff, they were all forced, no, two forced by Rashawn Gary, one forced by Kyle Brooks, and they were recovered by Gary Brooks and Jonathan Owens for the early fumble six. On defense, Jonathan Owens led the Packers with 12 tackles. They had three sacks all by Rashawn Gary, and two tackles for a loss, one by Lucas Van Ness, one by Jonathan Owens. The Lions 11 defense by Brian Branch with 8 tackles. No sacks, 3 tackles for a loss, though, one by Aiden, one by Kirby, one by Jerry. Riley Patterson missed his only kick of the day, which was an extra point attempt. Anders Carlson missed an extra point and a long field goal to end the first half. That's the statistical view on the game. Boys, they scored 20 in the first quarter, and the game was almost dead and buried at that point.
Yep. Just pain. Pain. Like, people who were watching with me and Matt yesterday could see our, well, especially my one, just getting worse and worse. By the end, I was just focusing more on the cats. I'm cat sitting and watching what was going on. I'm glad we managed to at least pull something back at the end to make it relatively close enough for us to at least attempt an onside kick, but it was just too little too late, unfortunately. There is some silver linings to look at. There were a few good performances from us that we can hopefully highlight later, but for the most part, some players need, and some of the coaches really need to go back to the drawing board over this next week and a bit we've got now and come up with some new stuff, because we are being found out right now by teams who we should not be losing to or even making it relatively close to. So what's it going to happen when we have to come up against the big boys and when we finally make the big dance in January? Because I still think we can make it, but we won't be going in with all the momentum I was hoping we'd be going for right now.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I'm absolutely not going to go into overreaction mode. Like, you know, I'm calm. I'm pissed, but I'm calm. And you know, I'm not going to say daft things like we're not going to make the playoffs, because we are going to make the playoffs, but we're not going to win a playoff game like with this level of play. Absolutely no way are we going to win a playoff game if we play like we have for the last three or four games, really, because, you know, the Chargers are a bad one-trick pony and they nearly beat us. The Bears are just a shower of just dysfunction and they nearly beat us. And then a Packers team that is like as mediocre as fuck. And, you know, they came to our backyard on Thanksgiving on national TV, and they were kind of like two and a half scores ahead for the whole game. Like, the score doesn't reflect how badly we were beaten this game. And we've kind of, I think all of us have seen it come in. Bad coaching, lots of mistakes, and not necessarily, like, I don't think any one player is to blame for this, but it's just, for me, it's an over-reliance on our offense, which we've been, you know, coasting through for the last few games, over-relying on the offense to do something special, and a defense that is just powder puff. There's just nothing to it at the moment. We never looked like we were going to turn over the ball. I think we're seventh worst in terms of turnovers. And the defense has regressed back to where it was 2 years ago, when we never looked like we were going to make a big play. We never looked like we were going to turn over the ball. Like, in that game, Jordan Love ain't it. Like, Jordan Love's not a top 10 QB. Did we at any point look like we were going to pick him? Were there any nearly interceptions? I don't remember any. And I don't remember any last week either. Just absolutely mid. And, you know, we will get through to the playoffs. And I still think we'll probably win the division. But we're not going to win a playoff game playing like that.
Let's go through the drive-by-drive and then we'll hit on some key game themes, things to be concerned about before talking briefly about the rest of Thursday's games. And we started off with a Packers drive, which started out in the worst possible way. Deep play-action pass to Christian Watson for 54 yards. One safety came down from the split safety look, so it left it as single high. And there was a big gap in between Kirby trying to rotate into the middle and Cam Sutton, who was meant to be covering Watson on the outside. And it was slightly underthrown. If Love actually puts this on the money, it's a walk-in touchdown. The fact is that it hung up there for a long time and no one still got close. It was a horrible play to watch because, I mean, it was like 3 or 4 seconds up there somehow and no one got close. Was it Tracy? Was it? My bad.
Yeah.
Apologies. And then on the very next play, I think, another throw to Watson. Huge hit by Tracy Walker on Watson. Kind of trying to tell him who's boss, but a bit late at that point. Later on in the drive, second and goal from the 10, touchdown, slant to Jaden Reeves, who beat Branch, went right in between him and Kirby. It was man coverage. I think a lot of people were hoping that Kirby could get his head around for that, but frankly, I think that was really unfair on Kirby to have a look at him there. He's just got to take his man. PAT is good, 7-0 Green Bay. Lions on their first possession look great, to be frank. Run, pass, not great to start off with. 3rd and 7, but a crosser to Jameson Williams for a first down. Great to get him going early on. Sideline throw to Gibbs on a wheel, and Quay Walker just kind of takes one for the team with a deliberate DPI when, you know, Gibbs maybe could have strolled in if he was allowed to continue. And a play-action pass to Sam Laporta on his own beater. A bit later on, 2nd down and goal from the 7. Touchdown on a slant to Sam Laporta on the left-hand side. Nice route by him. Good hands, good placement by Goff. PAT was missed wide left. The snap was fine, but it was caught with the laces facing the kicker. Had to spin it round, and it just disrupted the flow of the kick, which is why it went wide left. It was a shame. The spin was fine, but you could see the rhythm just wasn't quite there for Riley after having to do that. So 7-6 ball game at this point. Packers come back on their second possession. And I can see that my numbering system has already fallen down. Packers on their second possession. And they go 2nd and 7, play action pass to Heath for 16. And a really impressive rep by Jordan Love this. So go play action pass. There's going to be pressure in his face. He can see where it's coming from. So he moves one step to his left to buy him another second to make the throw. And sidearm slings it to Heath in the middle of the field. Maybe his best throw. I was super impressed by that. 3rd and 8 from their own 47, a quick out to Watson beating Jerry on the near sideline for 10 yards to get the first. Then he dumped off to AJ Dillon, who got 11. Then a jet sweep to Jaden Reed for 15. They were moving the ball seemingly with ease. 3rd and inches, Lions sell out against run, play action pass to Tucker Kraft, touchdown. 9 yards out, PAT is good, and an 8-point lead for the Packers. Lions then on their second possession, despite the fact that I've put third, which is super annoying. Offside on DPJ, barely ever see offside call on the offense, so that was super frustrating. 2nd down and 7 it was, sets them back down to 2nd down and 12. Then blitz coming on the next play, Goff sack fumbled, touchdown. Gary forced it, and you can see Goff is empty-handed, and the entire Lions offense just stopped playing after that ball comes out. And I don't get it, because if the offensive lineman gets out there or the wide receivers react to it, I think you can stop him. But Owens just kind of saunters in for a touchdown because everyone stopped playing. And the announcers call incomplete pass initially and then go, I think this is going to stand as a touchdown. It's like, yeah. And it looked like it live too. It was poor. The PAT was missed, so it left it a 14-point game. Lions then get their third possession, and on 3rd and 5, strip sacked again. Goff has to come forward under pressure, and it's only a little touch on his elbow, but you can see it's just enough to bring things through. Great play by Carl Brooks, who I unfortunately had the misfortune of really hyping in the preview show as saying he was having a fantastic season, and so it told. He recovered it himself too, and then on that third possession, the Lions actually stop them, which is really good at this point, keeping them in the game. McNeil on that first snap is hurt running into Jack Campbell. They both come together, both playing the ball, and don't see each other. I don't think there's any blame to accrue there. But McNeil has to go off. He passes concussion protocol, comes back in the game, which is really good. Great tackle by Barnes on Tucker Kraft for 6 on 3rd and 7. 4th and 1 in chip shot field goal range to make it a 3-possession game. They end up going for it. And in maybe the most farcical play of the entire game, Love hands it off to Dillon and runs into him, which is just so, so funny. Basically, the only time I've smiled all game. So that ended up as a tackle for a loss and a turnover on down. So the second fumble for Goff ends up not costing any points. I'll stop there. Boys, 20-6 down at this point, and we've stopped them on downs in chip shot field goal range. We moved the ball really nicely in that first drive. I know we missed a PAT, but the defense has gone to pot. I mean, Love's carving us up like turkey, which is convenient given the day, Steve.
Can I just give you some statistics on Christian Watson? Christian Watson, last 6 games, 27 yards against the Broncos, 33 yards against the Vikings, 37 against the Rams, 23 against Pittsburgh, 21 against the Chargers, 94 versus us.
And a half of that on one play, the very first play of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, 53 yards. So he's still, even with taking out that play out, he still scored 40-plus yards, which would be his highest since October. And, you know, once again, we take a no-mark mid-receiver and we make them look like the next reincarnation of Randy Moss. And it's just ridiculous. And so many times... And again, it feels like I'm picking on the guy every week, but Jerry's just like nowhere near him. And, you know, he's given him two and a half yards. And you can't cover someone like that. You have to be absolutely all over them. I think on the touchdown, he didn't even turn around when the receiver caught the ball. And this is just symptomatic of the play. You can't match him against someone like Christian Watson. And Christian Watson's, you know, arguably barely a wide receiver one. But, you know, we've seen what's happened against, you know, Keenan Allen and DK Metcalf was a good example in week two. You know, and this is like the most negative thing I'm going to say in the whole of this podcast, I promise. And I absolutely love Jahmyr Gibbs. But I was watching the Seahawks 49ers and Witherspoon playing, and you just think, did we make the right choice there? I love Gibbs. I absolutely love Gibbs. And I think he's going to be great for us.
Of course, I mean, we couldn't have Witherspoon anyway, but because we went one pick before, we could have taken Gibbs at six, and that's why we traded down potentially.
I mean, we could have traded up for him. One place, but I mean, Witherspoon looks absolutely the real deal, and I know that a lot of people on the pod, that was like their pick. And you know, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of the draft, but it's not necessarily all about the draft. It's just symptomatic of the fact that we've never really fully addressed the issue of corner. Cam Sutton's been pretty good, but I think he's kind of like a CB2. But we need a CB1. We've needed a CB1 since Slay went. And here we are now with someone like Christian Watson, who is as mediocre as anything in the league, and we've made him look a star. And when we reach the playoffs, we're going to play against a lot better wide receivers. You know, would you fancy who's going to cover AJ Brown? Who's going to cover Debo?
It doesn't Never mind Debo, Ayuk was the problem yesterday because they benched Woolen because of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And Woolen's been good for most of the season. So, yeah, that's kind of... I know that CJ being injured is a really big miss and there's nothing we could do about that, but it really does feel like we've missed a trick here. And also, it doesn't feel like we're scheming particularly well, or whether the coaching... in terms of safety cover is on point, because, you know, so many times the throws go in, the cornerback's 2 yards off the pace and the safety is just arrived just as they've caught the ball. And that's not good defense. Aaron Glenn. Rant over. Sorry, yeah. Ash.
It's fine. I'm going to go with your sort of last point first, because it's the one I corrected on the document. The first play where we give up the big thing, I get why you do it, because they're not going to expect us blitzing our best single high safety and leaving the guy who's a good blitzer in single high. But why the fuck are you doing that? Like, I know Kirby hasn't had a good past couple of weeks at single high, but his coverage ranges are a damn lot better than Tracy Walker's. And Tracy Walker, maybe, yeah, he might not be the best cover safety, but what he's good at is run defense and blitzing. He's an absolute missile when you blitz him. So why are you doing that? Why are you inverting the roles? Because that's what happens. I'm not saying that if Kirby's there, maybe he would have stopped the play, given the past couple of weeks, what we've seen with DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, but he might have limited the damage a bit better than how Tracy could have done. Like, and that's me saying that, I, as we all know, I love Kirby, but I have been a big detractor of him the past couple of weeks. I have pointed out when he's been wrong. And the past couple of weeks, he has been really off of his alignments in single high. He's been shading too far away from Jerry. and it's continued here again. So maybe it hasn't been Kirby. It's been what Glenn and Brian Duke, who's the safety specifically, the safety coach, has been telling him. That and just playing a damn lot of zone. I know I've looked at PFF before we came online. We supposedly played 45% man according to PFF. It feels didn't feel way like too it. High. It felt like we were playing zone 80% of the time.
What was Jerry's PFF score?
You sure you want to know? You sure you want to know?
Well, I bet it was under 50.
40.1.
Jerry, 40.1 with a coverage grade, which is probably the most pertinent, of 32.6.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that last season we fired Orby Pleasant. So, you know, that was Aaron Glenn's get out of jail card on that, that he fired the DB's coach. So the question is like, you know, we all love Kirby and Kirby's been great at times and he's made picks, but Kirby's going backwards. And that's got either Kirby is not putting the work in, which I can't see on this team that happening, or the coaching's not good enough.
Yeah. And it's painful. It's almost hilarious to say this, but the best thing we can maybe hope for in terms of Glenn is that Texas A&M could calling for him to for their head coaching position, because if you forget, he used to play there and he does have some pull with the locker room and such. They offer him $10 million and whatever it takes him to buy out of his contract here, and he goes and be their head coach because he gets the step up that he probably needs, because he seems to be a way better locker room guy than he is scheme maker. Like, let's be honest, like, I've been kind of positive with the scheme he's brought here on defense in a way, because it's 4-3, impose some aggressive fronts on the front, mixes in some multiple looks, obviously with Cam Jordan playing the sort of Aiden Hutchinson role. And it seemingly worked when he had Marshawn Lattimore on that. But it seems you really need to invest in it on that back end for it to make it work. And he just hasn't made it work here. So obviously, yeah, we've brought in Cam Sutton, gave him a big contract. We brought Emmanuel Mosley in to maybe fight out for a corner spot as well. Fortunately, he'd re-tore his ACL, which he won't snap into his play. CJ Garner Johnson, CD Juice, as he's going by now, got hurt week one, but he's coming back soon. Supposedly, he was doing press-ups before the game. We've tried to invest in there, but at the same time, you've got to develop what you've got underneath you. He was doing that seemingly the first couple of years with Jerry, with Kirby last year. With iffy kind of moving him to safety, but it just hasn't been enough. We needed him to make that big jump this year with all that investment. And it just hasn't happened, which is just disappointing, because that's the what big, like, that is, it's just a big thing. Like, it's, and he controls the whole defense as well. So he's got obviously have a hand in the pot of what's going up front as well. We brought in John Scott to be this aggressive defensive lineman because obviously Wash went to Carolina. Where's the aggression? Where's the bloody aggression? Hopefully, we've all saw the Brawley's breakdown clip from today showing what has happening to Hutch for most of the game. When they can do that, they can just game plan and double and triple team him because they know no other fucker's going to get off a block. That shows there's major problems going on. So it's not just up front, it's everywhere.
I was trying to focus on Hutch and I saw Hutch getting triple teamed like multiple times, triple teamed and almost all the time double teamed. So, yeah, it's like, well, what's going on the other side? What do you think, Matt? Because I know you've kind of been a bit higher on the defense than I have, but what do you think about, like, the DBs, coaching, Kirby, the regression? Am I just, like, obsessing on it, or do you think that, you know?
No, I think it comes down to coaching, I think, for me. The guys aren't executing, but when I have a look at what happens, if you have a look at yesterday, I think schematically we got it wrong. And we schematically got it wrong on defense against the Ravens in a really big way. And we just had no shot in that game. Whereas in this game, we were kind of in and amongst it. Me and Ash were talking, you know, we gave up 20 points in the first quarter and then 9 the rest of the way. So the points weren't really an issue beyond the first quarter. Even though they were still progressing down the field, they were still slicing and dicing. We seemed to give up so much in zone coverage, it wasn't funny. And actually, one of the reasons why they didn't score points is because of misfires by Love rather than us putting any pressure on him. We did get a few pressures, forced him to throw it away a little bit beyond quarter one, but it was few and far between. And there were good points about the defense, and I'll come on to it later when we come on to this in a bit more detail. But I do think it falls to Glenn. And I ain't calling for his head or anything like that. I just think that he is naive as a coordinator. And I agree with Ash in that kind of his defense requires superstar talent that we don't have. And then, like, okay, so be pragmatic. And the pragmatic shift on the defense was moving from heavy man to heavy zone. But now that's starting to be figured out. And actually, generally speaking, it's offenses and defenses that can do it any which way, that can, you know, mess things up a little. Not mess things up, but, like, mean that you don't know what's coming. Yeah, mix it up. And we don't mix it up nearly enough. And it just feels like the other team are reading our playbook. And that means we're super predictable. And that comes down to coaching. It's not on the players. And sure, could they execute better? Yes. But if they're not being put in a good position to start with, I think it's unfair to rag on the players. Like, we should be supporting them through thick and thin. And we're 8-3. Like, I'm backing the players, but the coaches need to be better. Dan Campbell needs to be better. We've backed him most of this season, but we'll come onto it in a second. One egregious call by him in this game. And, I mean, if you go, what was it, 0-5 on fourth down?
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly Ben Johnson's best performance either, so coaching on all sides of the ball.
But the fourth downs we did go for, they're all like 4th and 5, 4th and 7. Yeah. Like, it wasn't just like, you know, 4th and 1s, you can kind of, you know, when you've got David Montgomery, that shouldn't be an issue. But we were, I don't think the fourth down thing was necessarily the main factor. I think fourth down was a symptom of what the you know, downs 1-3 were happening.
Yeah, right, let's get on with the rest of this. So, where did we get to? Right, Lions' fourth drive, Frank got injured but came back in shortly afterwards. Play action pass to Malcolm Rodriguez for 6 on a quick out to the left-hand side. That was really nice to see. Goff then misses Sam Laporta on a 3rd and 3 near midfield, just threw it too high, and Sam, to his credit, got a big leap up there like a basketball player and managed to get a big hand to it, but he had no shot to really catch it and actually almost ended up causing an interception because he flipped up too high. We decide to punt, which I think is an interesting equation. Now, I'm not sure of the exact position on the field, and I'm just going to have a look now. We were at the Lions 48, so just on our side of the pit field on 4th down, and they have 4th down and 2, 4th down and 3 on the coverage. And we decide to punt. I'll come back to you guys on that in a minute. Packers ensuing possession, play action dump off to AJ Dillon, who, when Jerry goes low, he goes high and then bounces off Alex Anzalone and goes down for 22 yards. Then Bohanna had the encroachment penalty where he just crashed into the guards, which I thought was really funny. In a tragic sort of way. And then a play action pass over the middle to Dobbs, beating Jerry again, although that coverage is much better from Jerry. 3rd down and 5, Watson and Sutton had a collision. That was not called. I thought that was a good reffing decision. It was just two players running into each other. And then the field goal was good from 43 yards. Packers extend the lead to 3 possessions, 23-6. Lions then on their 5th possession, illegal contact on Isaiah McDuffie? Yeah, must be. Yeah. Against Sam Laporta, extends the drive on 3rd down and 10. Got a bit lucky there, especially with a tipped ball at the line on the throw. Gary then had a horse collar tackle on Gibbs, which wasn't called. Gibbs could have broken it big, and after about 7 yards or so, got Hoyt down above the nameplate, but no flag. Goff on the next throw steps up in the pocket, hits Khalif down the middle for 20. Goff then gets Green Bay to jump, so you've got a free play, ends up throwing it away under pressure, but he was in the tackle box, so gets called for grounding, and the offside is not called, so the Lions just go back by 10. Not entirely sure, even on replay, whether they were in the neutral zone or not, but you can see why Goff did what he did. It was just unfortunate. 4th down and 4, and Goff stripped again, although this one was called incomplete. And I mean, if it was 3rd down and 4, you would have been challenging that because it was almost certainly a fumble. But turnover on downs either way. Packers then with 2 minutes to go. Wide receiver screen to Reed. Tackle for a loss by Kirby. So again, Kirby coming up to the line. Asher, I know you might be a fan of the result, but maybe not the method. Dillon then gets 17 down the middle. Tackle for loss by Branch this time on Jaden Reed. Lovely play by him. And then Love pressured and throws it away. And then they try and draw us offside, take the delay game, and they pump. Lions with 35 seconds left and three timeouts, but pretty much get nothing going at all. There was Goff and Amon-Ra Brown being on a completely different page, running different routes to the ball that was thrown. First time in a long time we've seen Goff and Amon-Ra not be on the same page. That was, if you want a sign of trouble, that's it right there. And then a throw to Sam LaPorta for a first down, negated by an illegal shift, sets us back even further. And then on third and forever, we do like the most random flea flicker ever. And he throws it deep to J-Mo, who, if he does a comeback, will have all the space in the world. But he never gets his head around. And even if he caught it, our seeker was a legal man downfield anyway, which was declined. So we end up punting. And with 5 seconds left, it's like 72 yards for the field goal. But they managed to get nine and get down inside 4 seconds. So they can take a 63-yard attempt. And they just miss it. And Khalif Raymond catches the ball 9.5 yards deep in the end zone, decides to return and gets out to the 40 before he gets tackled. And that's the half. So a lot to go through there, boys. Specifically, though, first off, the decision to punt down 17, just about on your side of the field on fourth down and a long two. At the time when Mian Ash was talking about it, Steve, I said, I think it's a good decision to punt here. I don't want them to be out of sight. I feel like, you know, if we're going to win this game, we need to make some stops anyway. So just trust the defense and don't put yourself in a bad situation. But looking back on it now, given the other situations where we went for it, it feels a bit weird that we didn't go for this one.
Yeah, I think a lot of the later ones are just desperation decisions. I don't think, I've kind of like come around to the way that Campbell deals with fourth down. And like most of the time, I think he makes the right call now. And actually, I kind of think this was the right call because the offense just never, at this point, the offense I thought was kind of in disarray. So there was nothing that I was feeling confident that we were, you know, going to do anything with the ball. And I had no confidence in us making the fourth down. Maybe Campbell just thought, right, let's get them in at halftime and, you know, rearrange, you know, re-scheme the offense and, you know, we can kind of come back then. And so I'm kind of okay with the punt. That's kind of one of the least worst decisions, I think, that we did.
What about the rest of what happened in that sort of set? You had AJ Dillon leaping over Jerry, which was a horrible to watch. You had the no call, the Watson and Sutton kind of DPI, not DPI. There was the intentional grounding called on Goff. We did get a bit of pressure on Love. Then we kind of screw ourselves up and then they get the field goal attempt to kind of summarize all of that.
Where do we start? I mean, it was all so scrappy and all so messy. You know, I think we've talked a bit about the defense, just in terms of the offense at this point. Like Goff is now doing that thing where he just looks shook. He looks, you know, uncomfortable, nervous. He's seeing ghosts. And it's just because there's relentless pressure on him. Like, I think, was the pressure rate like 45, 50%? It was ridiculously high.
At this point, it was 50%. Going into the half, it was 50%.
Yeah, no wonder the guy looks like, you know, he needs to, he's nearly soiled his trousers because he's just getting pressure all the time. And what do we know about Goff? Plain sailing Goff looks a world beater. But the minute that it all gets a bit adversarial, you know, then he doesn't always crumble, but he's just a different quarterback. He's, you know, and he looks skittish. And that's when Goff starts to run, bad things tend to happen. So, you know, it felt at this point, I was like, where is our fabled O-line? And the other thing which was really frustrating about the offense is I genuinely thought that this would be a game where we could absolutely feast on the Packers' defense. When you look at the inactives, no Jair Alexander. I think, was it Savage, the safety, was out as well? Darnell Savage was out?
Savage didn't play, I don't think, and Rudy Ford didn't play, which was the big miss at safety. They also didn't have
Devondre Campbell
was the big miss,
and obviously Rasul Douglas is now at the Bills.
Yeah.
So you know, their secondary was decimated, and I genuinely thought that Amon-Ra would have, you know, 150-yard game. Amon-Ra had two catches in the first half. Like, oh my god. Jameson Williams, who I'm absolutely not criticising at all, because I think he played well. He made a couple of big catches, looked decent. But surely, if Alexander's out, that's a massive opportunity for us to scheme Jameson in and really stretch their secondary. And I think Jameson caught two balls, and I don't think he had that many targets. So why couldn't we have really capitalised on that? And like I said, two catches for Amon-Ra. That's just terrible in the first half.
Ash, what do you think about this period of play?
It wasn't good. There was some... the one that stands out to me is the no offside intentional grounding, because we both spotted the offside. Goff obviously then spots it as well, snaps it. Obviously gets pressure, throws away, thinking, oh, yeah, it's a free play. And if anything, it's going to be negating fouls. We reset. What happens? They just don't call the offside for some reason, because he's not so far. He's not too far forward. It's fine. So we just get the intentional grounding. Like, yeah, it was intentional grounding. Not saying it wasn't. It was.
I do find it weird that you'd throw it away if you do think you have an offside, though. Like, moonball it into the end zone if you have to. But, you know.
True, yeah. Exactly, yeah. It's one of them. It should have been, the offside should have been called. Like, it's obvious. That's why we snapped it. That's why you could see Goff going some, like, but he was offside. Nope, just the intentional grounding. And yeah, we know we're getting desperate when we're trying to copy plays from USA. Because I've looked back at that flea flicker, and it's basically the famous USC flea flicker that did last week that Seattle then tried to copy on Sunday, just gone. And now we've just tried to copy it with a slight variation where instead of going down the sideline, it's J-Mo up the seam. Didn't work. There's a reason it works so well for USC, and that's because you've got Caleb Williams, who has a Mahomes, Josh Allen level arm. As much as we love Goff, he's not that level of arm strength. And no, he did get it quite far. It was just a bit too high, and J-Mo just couldn't get his head around to get to it.
It was a very robotic, mechanical flea flicker, wasn't it? Well, it didn't look fluid. It looked like they're not practicing it. Like, as it was happening, I was like, Oh God. Oh, this is going to be a flea flick. Oh, it was like, it just looked exactly awful.
I'm usually one for like the trick plays. I was a bit like, what the hell? Like, I would love, that's one thing I'm waiting for the Pride of Detroit proper POD cast, because I cannot wait for Jeremy Reisman's like 5-minute rant on that. I can just sense it coming. It's going to be funny. As much as me and Jeremy might have some bad blood right now, of course, me joking, I'm saying this is a joke, but me and him have some bad blood because of the whole schematic running quarterback question that we will avenge when we go to Detroit next year. I can't wait for that. But it was not good enough. Like, I completely agree with you, Steve. At that point, and I think I said it on the stream, Goff just looked rattled. He looked like, Cleveland Browns last year of his time there, Baker. He looked like Sam Darnold at the Jets. He just didn't know what was happening to him. He was panicking under the pressure again. It was back to early Detroit Lions Jared Goff, where he just could not settle for the life of him. And that's bad, because this is the kind of point we need him to. Like, we're kind of in the hole. The defense, for the most part, at this point, getting stops. We had to capitalize onto that. We had the chance to, on that, especially that sixth drive where we started, admittedly, we've got 35 seconds. We had the chance to double up there. If we got a touchdown on that, and maybe, so that would have been 7 points. That's 23-13. We go into the half. We get the ball to open the second half. Okay, yeah, we don't usually score that many points off our first drive in the second half. But if we did, imagine if we had that momentum, the game could have been 23-20. The Packers haven't touched the ball in a while, and we've got all the momentum. But instead, it's just that it's not there. We left it too little, too late.
Don't forget, it could have been worse. If Love and AJ Dillon had run into each other, they'd have probably scored again. Just to answer Mike in the chat, Amon-Ra did have 9 catches, But like I said, just only two in the first half. Most of the seven in the second half were when we were playing hurry-up offense, kind of in garbage time. So, you know, you can't have him only two catches in the first half when their secondary is just so in disarray. And you've got Jameson Williams to stretch the field, and you've got Khalif, and you've got Sam Laporta. Like, what are we doing? Why can't Goff find a man open?
Yeah, it was... I think someone in the chat yesterday when we were talking said, has Goff been smoking dope? Because he just had that sort of face on him that kind of like there was nothing behind the eyes. He was like...
He was just empty.
He was just blank.
He was like just Ken at that point.
smoking.
I don't know that much about drug paraphernalia, but I don't think you smoke ket. That's like some next level shit, man.
Right, let's get into the second half and get out of Dodge.
Let's talk it off air, Ash.
Lions, as Ash mentioned, do start on offense to start a second half. And despite him saying, you know, we don't score very much in the third quarter, we do end up with a touchdown.
Can I just say the halftime show was crap?
Yes. Looked like he was on like some B-Tech version of the Pingu set. I literally said that to Matt during it.
Wait, did you ever have the misfortune of being taken by your parents to the Santa's Grotto at the local shopping centre? That's what the set looked like. Yeah. It was fucking diabolical.
I quite like Jack Harlow as well. Like, I find him, as far as rappers go, quite palatable.
Oh. He's not a rapper. He's a mumbler.
I'll let you say that to his face. Where we go. Right.
That's hip-hop behind me. What Jack Harlow does, he's just mumbling.
Anyway,
sorry, I just wanted to get my lack of appreciation for the halftime show over. I think that set us off to a bad start.
True. I mean, supposedly Google searches for how old is Dolly Parton increased with her halftime show.
Right.
So someone said that when Dolly Parton came on, they thought they were like honouring a Cowboys cheerleader that was retiring.
Oh no.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about the second half. So as I say...
Must we?
Yes, we must. And then we can get out of here. Lions score on their first possession, though, and actually make the game somewhat interesting in the second half. So Gibbs... on the toss, with Decker out in front of him, very first play of the second half, goes for 23 down the sideline, takes it immediately into Packers territory. And then a play-action pass on a zone beater to Amon Ra St. Brown for another 28. It was a stacked look with him just behind JMO, and then he moves from left outside him to inside him, this lovely design play. Monty then runs on 3rd and 6 in the red zone for a touchdown. Holding call on Khalif Raymond in the end zone looked somewhat weak to me, but we'll come on to that in just a second.
Absolutely piss weak, that was.
Ensuing 3rd and 1, because the spot of the foul was 9 yards beyond the line to gain, so you come back to 3rd and 1, and converted by Monty, and then the very next play, 1st and goal from the 5, and he stretches out to the goal line for the touchdown, lying up on a pack. A 2-point try, and we go run by Monty as well. And he just got in before a Packer basically headed to the ball. He reached out for it, and a Packer really kind of did a soccer-style header of the ball, which was quite amusing. I thought I didn't even get there, to be honest.
It reminded me of the time when Phil Jones at Man United headed the ball. He was on the ground. There's a very good gif of that somewhere.
I remember that, yep.
So that makes it 23-14. I'm going to come on to the 2-point go, no go as well for you guys later. So think on that. Packers 7th possession. Missed holding call on Aiden is just too boring to mention, but like it's the most obvious call I've seen against Aiden not call yet this season. Then an easy conversion on 3rd and 2. No pressure on Love. across the middle of the field to Jaden Reed for 14 versus zone coverage once again. Then Love, amazing scramble throw across the entire field from right to left for 12 yards. Jacobs then had a tackle for a loss on second down and three, and then a nice throw, but a bad drop by Dobbs forces them to punt, and they get it down at the Lions' 3-yard line. So obviously, bad starting field position, but the Lions have the ball down by nine. So chance here to do something. And Goff throws to Amon-Ra Brown on the far sideline, and he's almost picked. An incredible play by Amon-Ra to get there just about first and make sure to kind of rip it away from him. I think it was Corey Corey Ballantyne, the former Lion.
Yes, Ballantyne's the former Lion. Valentine's the former UDFA.
There we go. Yeah, so a fantastic play by Amon-Ra to avoid another turnover there. And then it's fourth down and seven, six, whatever it is, deep in Lions territory. And we run a fake punt. Do not get there. Packers not fooled. Turnover at the 23-yard line of Detroit. Packers then have Elgton Jenkins called for holding on Aiden, finally. Sets him down to second and 17. But Love goes deep to Dobbs for 14 on third and three. Watson touchdown, mismatch versus Jerry. He's bigger, faster, stronger. They go for two as well. Interesting decision. That puts it a three-possession game again as well if they get it. But they don't get it. They tried the insert name here of team special, which we, I believe, invented at the NFL level. Was called the Philly Special because they ran it in the Super Bowl. They try and run this and we smell it out. Really nice play by us. 29-14 Packers, so still a two-score game. Lions take over for the ninth possession. Raymond slant for 15, then a wide receiver screen on third down and five for 7 yards. Nice block by Amon-Ra St. Brown on that play. Gibbs then rocked by a huge hit by Jonathan Owens. Raymond then on a counter toss for six, so he kind of lines up in the backfield in like the fullback position, and we fake a toss to the running back, and it's taken up by him the other way. It was nice design on that, and got us in good field position. Then Goff play action, tight end screen to Sam LaPorta for a loss. Really nice design, but Lucas Van Ness read it all the way. If he's beaten, we've got three guys out in front, so it was a real shame that we couldn't get that one there. Second down and 12, catch fumble by Gibbs, recovered by the Lions, called incomplete. From second down and 12, it would have been third and five. Lions decided to keep the challenge in their pocket to maintain the timeouts. Then go running back screen in game five. Again, it could have worked, but Gibbs kind of stuttered when he didn't need to and he had a head of steam. Fourth down and seven, and another sack fumble by Rashawn Gary ends the drive. I'll stop here before going into the final quarter of play. Boys, Lions score early, get the 2 points. I think it's very questionable to go for the two when you need 7-7 and three to tie the game, that you go for two there, but they did it. The holding call on Kalief came before that in the end zone, so we need to touch on that. You had the Love throw across the entire field, who scrambles almost all the way to the right-hand sideline and then throws all the way to the left-hand sideline. I thought that was a terrific throw. And then you had the fake punt before the Packers get the three, and then you have the Gibbs fumble, not fumble, and kind of lots of plays that were well-designed that ended up not really working. You had the sort of the counter toss to Raymond, you had the Sam LaPorta screen, which should have worked, but didn't. You had the Gibbs running back screen that should have worked, that didn't. Of course, if we challenged it successfully, the running back screen for five would have converted there. So, you know, the timeout maybe is valuable, but not as valuable as actually converting in that position. I don't know. So lots to go on there. I'll come back to Steve now. Me and Ash have kind of somewhat already talked about this yesterday. So what did he make of that third quarter? Because we came back into it and 9 points down with the ball in hand.
Yeah, I guess when you're kind of like 17 points down at the half, like you have to shut out, you know, the third quarter. You can't afford to let them score again. So the fact that we did was like massively disappointing. And also, like I said, the offense just looked like we were constantly having to pull rabbits out of hats. Like, the first and second down play calling, I just felt was maybe one of Ben Johnson's worst games this year, because we just weren't consistently, you know, moving the chains. And most of the plays that were, where we did get a first down, we were like, you know, they were stopped, you know, after 11, 12 yards. There was never any chance of like extra yardage. And it kind of always felt like the Packers had an extra man in the backfield. You know, and I don't think that the wide receiver group did much wrong. I know there were a couple of wrong routes ran, but, you know, I just don't think they were given much to work with. And I don't understand why Goff was taking so long to throw. You know, we should have had more people open. And I mean, I've not like seen the film, but I think that's going to be a really interesting one of like, why is Goff holding onto the ball so long? I don't know if you picked into that, Matt, on your second watch through.
Coverage was great. Legitimately, it was a complimentary football kind of thing where the pass rush put Goff under pressure and they were able to cover long enough to make it difficult for him. And they worked together in harmony. They looked like a team that had their first team on the field. And it's a great credit to, dare I say it, Joe Barry. And I'm going to come on to outcoached question mark is a theme for later on, which we can come on to. But I thought Joe Barry is the MVP of the game.
What a disgusting thought.
I know. It's rough to even have the words.
This is Ash taking a big swig.
Yeah. Ash, what did you make of the third quarter?
Well, we were both ecstatic, I remember. We were scoring to open the third. We were like, finally, we scored a touchdown in the third quarter. Is the third quarter Warriors over? No. Like, to sort of go over the point we're just making, I remember there was one play in the third where Goff had to throw it away, and on the replay they showed the coverage and it was amazing. Like, it was textbook coverage. Like, every defender was right next to the person they were defending. It was insane. Like, and the reason I was shaking, because I was talking a lot of mad shit about Joe Barry throughout this game, and yet he coached a pretty good second half, like pretty much whole game, pretty much. Like, he's the most vanilla, bland defensive coordinator ever. And yet, he managed to outthink Aaron Glenn. That's concerning when, like, Barry's given the same sort of treatment that Jonathan Gannon was given by Eagles fans, who are like, you've got all this talent, why aren't you using it well? Glenn might be starting to get that here, but move away from that for later. It was just... this, like, the sack fumble to end so literally the last way in this bit we're discussing, that was kind of a killer. Like, Goff had never fumbled three times in his career, and it made it something like six proper turnovers in two games. We'd only committed five turnovers in the previous like nine games before. That, again, is probably something I'm going to come into later, because I think you said, Stephen, the open build-up about what's really flipped the script for us these past couple of games. But it was just, we were going well. We'd pulled ourselves sort of back, especially with that 2 points. With Matt, I was a bit confused by it, but in hindsight, it kind of made sense, because it's just us trying to minimise the amount of possessions we needed to maybe catch up. It still made it the same, but if... they scored if they scored the field goal, it would have probably been the same result than if we just went for the extra point field goal. It would have been the two pointers meant we would have been level if they got another field goal rather than still behind. So it kind of made sense with that sort of game logic. But the fact that we were already there to open up the third is worrying. And then as it got compounded by the fake punt with JRM, which, if you're going to run, the reason that worked so well in the past is you had CJ Moore, who ran a 4.32 at the combine, running it as the up man, or you had Godwin UK running it, who ran a 4.3 flat. JRM, I think I remember rightly, ran a 4.6. There's a lot of speed difference there, and the Packers sniffed it out, and JRM just does not have the speed and agility to work his way out of room. You could see the holes already closing up, so he tries to cut it back. I just meet the defender. It was just a poor play call. It was just, we started so well, we were just clawing our waves back into things, and then suddenly, door slam shuts and again.
And I think the play call on that fourth, on the punt, the fake punt, it was, this is Campbell, like, desperate. And I think because we'd scored on our first drive, he was obviously, you know, he obviously thought that he had to do something. He had to, like, make a big call. And we didn't. Like, if we were confident in the offense after the first drive where we'd scored and we'd looked much better, then you've still got, what, I don't know, 21 minutes of play. But it just seemed to me that Campbell was a bit shaken as well. And Campbell, maybe his confidence in the offense had been knocked, that he thought he had to, like, do something that was, you know,
radical.
It just didn't make any sense. And I think the panic of that just injected itself into the players.
Yeah,
it reeked of desperation. And I think more than the speed working on those plays is, generally speaking, the fake punts have worked because somewhat they're totally unexpected. They're unnecessary. At this point, you don't need to do it. And so they're not expecting it. Whereas here, you're down by 9 deep in your own territory and you need possessions because your defense isn't cutting the mustard. A fake punt is the most obvious bloody move in the book. Mm. And so I'd be selling out for an Upman play. If you want to fake punt, put it in Jack Fox's hands, let him throw it. But also, it's fourth and, I'm looking at now, it's 4th and 4. If you're that confident in the offense, leave it in Goff's hands. And then, like, you can say, well, we're trying to put our best foot forward. But to put it in the punt group's hands and just hope that they get it, like, it so often works. I do wonder why less teams try doing this, especially in sort of 45, 50, 45 on the other side sort of territory, why they don't try and do this more, because it works more often than you think. But you're chucking the game away at this point. In a 9-point game where you've just forced a punt, trust your defense. Because if you steal the possession here, you score, you get your 8 points, and then Green Bay score again anyway, then what was the point? So the defense have got to make a stop. So just trust them.
Yeah, well, let me sum it this way. Any play where you're trying to put Will Harris on offense and he's getting offensive snaps, you know there's trouble ahead. Because he was in on that fake punt. So now he has a 60.0 PFF offensive grade for the season.
I mean, I'd have almost preferred them to put it in Montgomery's hand and call a run play on 4th and 5. Because I think Montgomery, the way he runs, you know, if we'd have put in like a 3 tight end scheme, I think Montgomery would have been a lot closer to getting it than the fake punt. But yeah, we should have trusted Goff. And having someone like St. Brown and Laporta, I mean, they're so good in those situations.
Or Raymond, who had a fantastic day doing those sorts of things. The thing is, if you want to do a fake punt, J-Mo is quite often a gunner on punts.
Yeah.
So having him run a route with Fox throwing the ball is far more likely to succeed because he's going to be man-to-man on the outside anyway. So he can just do a sort of quick out or a comeback route. It's a hard ask for Jack Fox, but he's proven before that he can do that sort of thing. So you did the fake punt the wrong way and don't do the fake punt anyway, is where I'm at.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that sums it up.
All right. Let's move on to the final part of play. Packers 9th possession after we turn over with, again, the sack fumble by Gary. And Love throws it down the middle to Heath for 13. Great catch on good coverage versus Brian Branch. I mean, Branch had him, you know, it was so close. I thought Branch was going to have a DPI and it was not called. I thought it was well reffed, actually, in that part. Heath then speed out, beating Jerry. 3rd and 5, Love threw just too high for Reed. And the Packers go on this awful first attempt of 2, trying to draw us offside, but they didn't even really try. They just took a delay. It was weird. So that was 4th and 5, back to 4th and 10. You see teams quite often decline the penalty there to kind of make sure that it's a more difficult punt, but we accepted it. Not really sure why. In the ensuing possession after they punt, Goff scrambles for 5 yards. As soon as he's taking off at the moment, I'm fearing another fumble. Just rather he didn't. JMO then on a crosser from left to right, hits him in stride. Lovely throw by Goff, actually. And JMO got lots of yak and a gain of 38. Then Goff over the middle to Raymond for 24. Gibson goes for a run down the far sideline and gets hit marginally out of bounds. Crown wanted a flag. I definitely wanted a flag. It looked egregious on the live, but then down the sideline didn't look quite as bad. Amon Ross and Brown, wide receiver screen, read by Owens really, really well on third down, forces fourth and seven. And then Goff, they decide to go for it on fourth and seven in the red zone. Goff throws it towards Sam Laporta, but it's behind him slightly and a turnover on downs thrown to the end zone. And that's pretty much curtains at that point. And then Packers' final possession of the game, third and one, which we force, and then Love zone read keeper runs all the way down the side, far sideline for 40 yards down to the Detroit 37. And he slid early. Like, there was no one near him. He just did it to kill clock, which is, ugh. Went conservative after that and killed clock by running the ball. Lions bring blitzes, which kind of stopped their momentum. Then they throw for the third down to try and convert. And Watson beats his guy, which I think is Jerry back there. But Love, backpedaling with pressure in his face, can't make the throw deep. So they have to punt. And then the Lions are 2:46 to go. And all three timeouts, if they can score with 50 seconds on the clock, they can technically, if they make a three and out stop, get the ball back once just for one play. So you would think that they would, you know, really go for this, but they prioritized scoring and they shot themselves in the foot a few times in this possession too. So the fact they did get a touchdown here is a bit surprising to me. Goff underneath to Amon Ross and Brown, first play for 15. Then at a fourth and inches conversion with a check down to Gibbs. That was a 2-minute warning. And again, check down to Gibbs. And he tried to run for the sideline, but didn't quite get out of bounds with his knee going just in bounds. Holding then on Frank Ragnow, which was a shame. Second down and 20. And Amon Ross and Brown, maybe with the play of the day for the Lions, takes it down the sideline. And I think it's Carrington Valentine is manning the sideline. And just Amon Ross fakes him out and gets another 6 yards or so. So on second down and 20, he gets 25. Then a lovely throw to Raymond again for 23 over the middle. And then Goff to Reynolds for a 12-yard touchdown. 2-point try to Sam Laporta is good with just a quick dragon spacing concept with a curl at the sticks, which he caught. 29-22 after that, 27-point game, but onside kick's no good, and that's the ball game. Final possessions there, boys, and the Lions managed to get a stop in that first pack of possession after the fumble gave them back the ball. So again, we get the ball back 15 points down and fourth and seven. We're in the red zone. We're really close. The wide receiver screen was totally blown up. That was a bad play design in that area of the field. I guess he was expecting pressure, which never came. In the fourth and seven, had pressure, good coverage, couldn't convert. But if we score there and then we stop them, we've still got a chance. So, you know, you can't say the Lions didn't put themselves in position to actually get back in this and just couldn't execute in the vital moments. And then that Love zone read keeper is just a dagger in the heart. And then, yeah, we score. And they weren't playing pre-event. That was Goff legitimately getting a touchdown with, you know, and I was saying to Ash, you know, they didn't go soft zone pre-event, which is why they won the game. Because if we were playing the Bears, they would have been giving us chunk plays every single down and we'd have scored with a head of steam. The fact that they stayed on it was great, but also meant that Goff touchdown was legit because he had to fight for every single yard. The Amon Ra play was terrific down the sideline, but too little, too late, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of feel the game's dead with about 6 or 7 minutes to go. You're already kind of feeling that we're not. I mean, and I think because I got no confidence that we wouldn't be able to stop the Packers if we did score. I mean, you know, the fourth and seven, you know, that's a really hard play to pull off because the Packers are very, you know, good on the red zone. I had no confidence that Goff was going to make the throw because he looked rattled and all of his throws seemed a little bit off. They seemed to be coming out of his hands a bit wobbly. It was incredibly depressing at this point because, you know, up until probably third quarter, you're kind of going, okay, you know, we've done this against the Bears. We've got ourselves in a mess. We've dug ourselves out of it. But for me, the fourth quarter was pretty flat. Like, I just didn't have any confidence that we got enough to pull out of the fucking tailspin that we're in.
Ash?
Yeah, just... Ooh. I am on, thank God. I was muting myself there. Yeah, it just... Too little, too late. We made it kind of look good in the box score by putting ourselves within seven, but yeah, in reality, this game was done by the start of the fourth. Like, we could come, we could score a touch. Even if we scored one earlier, they probably would have still found a way. Like, come on, like the third and one with Jordan Love just running it. Like, this shows everything. They just, whatever we pretty much called up, they could just call something to beat it on offense. Like, LaFleur, as much as we like, probably like to give him grief, when it comes down to it, he is a really good damn play caller. He might be a Shanahan disciple, so he does basically the same shit that half the offense does. The offenses in the league do on offense, but at least he's got a bit of creativity with it. He mixes things up, does a couple of things that's different, and it worked today. Like, fair play to us for getting the touchdown late, but yeah, too little, too late. They knew the onside kick was coming. They knew it had to come. They set up perfectly, even though we lined up as if we're going to kick it deep, and then Fox did his thing. We got a bit more of a run up. They just knew it was coming. There was no way we were going to get that onside kick back unless we did what Matt and me were discussing beforehand in the game, where Fox just decides to leverage at one of the Packers players, hopes it bounces off them, and we recover it. But we weren't going to do that. There's no way. Like, we're just, I don't want to say we're too soft for it, but it's just, don't think that's our kind of, that's not in our nature. If we're going to beat them with an onside kick, we kind of want to do it fairly in a way. When in reality, we need to treat these games like it's a, to use like the sort of English term, we need to treat it like it's a local derby. Like, this is West Ham Mill Mall in the FA Cup, and it's just dirty, and you need to do whatever you can to win. We didn't do that when it came down to it, and it kind of bed fruits.
I'm going to say a sentence now that I never thought I would utter this year. I'm worried about Josh Dobbs. Because
who?
Dobbs.
Oh, Vikings. Sorry. Yeah.
Because exactly who? But, you know, he's got some mobility. And when Love did that run on, is it third and one?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking about what Fields did to us. I'm thinking, you know, going back, Lamar torched us. That it's that quarterback with some mobility. And, you know, Dobbs is not in the Lamar category, I know. But he is mobile and he will run. And
well, we've struggled against good pass catchers, big pass catchers, and Jefferson and Hockenson will tear us a new one.
Yeah, Jefferson will be back by then. Hockenson, I'm sure, will be looking to prove a point. And Dobbs will be mobile and it will cause us trouble because... When, you know, if we can't get to him, which, you know, we're not showing great pass rush at the moment, then he's just going to do like 5-6 yard runs and just rack up the first downs. And I'm really worried about like those last four games now. I mean, who would have thought the Broncos was a game to be worried about like 6 weeks ago?
Oh, not 6 weeks ago, but in preseason I did.
Yeah,
and then on like, the preview on the midweek, the mid-season, I said as much as well.
If you'd have gone back 6-7 weeks and said,
Broncos, oh yeah, Vikings, it was chalked Cowboys, up as a W. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, but now those, you know, we've got the Saints next week on the road, and you know, Derek Carr, like a broken clock, is right twice a day. You know, he makes the odd good throw. The Bears have caused us trouble last week, and this time they're going to be playing at home and outdoors. And then I think we've got four tough games. Now, I still think we're going to end up on 10, 11 wins. But I'm worried. I'm really worried.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you. Right. Let's come on to some game themes. And the first one I just have is lots of damn Skipper in the game as the sixth man, which is something that we've not really seen a lot of this season. He had a very good grade for himself as well, but we didn't actually progress the ball very well during that. Do you like having the sixth man in? Because, I mean, it's worked well for us in the past as a schematic thing. I feel like it seems to be something they saw on tape that they thought they could take advantage of, but it didn't work.
I mean, you know, I'm not sure Montgomery needs a sixth man. The way that Montgomery and Gibbs have been running, I'm not sure that it's. But it did feel that didn't they bench Sorsdale towards the end of the game?
End of first half.
Going into the second end of the first half, they replaced him Fowler-Seeker at left guard.
Yeah, so you know, I kind of thinking, you know, let's pay Jonah Jackson, let's pay him because when he's not there, he's a big mess.
Yeah, and but I said my piece on it as well on this thing. Why the hell were we getting him in motion? This is a 6 foot like nine man. He's not going to be able to move quickly. You're bringing him in motion. It's basically telling them, oh yeah, we're going to run now and he's going to be a lead blocker. And they were able to sniff it out for 1 or 2 yards. It was just, as much as we don't like Matt Nelson, at least he's kind of got a bit of mobility to be able to adjust to things and actually block with Skipper. It just didn't work. It didn't work. He's a nice story. He's as like one of the biggest players ever to play in the NFL and he's a good lad, but it just wasn't it putting him in motion at all this game.
The first time that they put Skipper in motion, I actually thought I'd sat on my TV remote and it had gone into like half speed. I'm like, oh my God.
I was worried seeing him move that they were going to call a false start because they thought he was shuddering rather than he was actually moving. There we go. Right. Oh. So here we come into outcoached. And the point I had specifically was Lions zone coverage torn apart. But generally speaking, I kind of outlined earlier how in all three phases, head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, things didn't quite work out for the Lions while, you know, on all three phases, the Packers seemed to have it sorted. Special teams too, they turned up the Packers. And SW Lions specifically saying, the Lions haven't played great since the loss against the Ravens, which is something you're alluding to, Steve. How much of it is on coaching? How much on personnel? You kind of touched on this point when you asked me, but I'm going to throw back it back to you now. The zone coverage on the defense, do you think that's the right call, the shift that we've made this year? Because that seemed to be where they were getting the most joy. And just generally, is it on players? Is it on coaching? Is it a bit of both?
I think we're awful on zone. I don't think it suits any of our defensive backs. And I think Brian Branch is kind of single-handedly like shoring us up because, you know, it seems to suit him. And he's been playing brilliantly, but I don't think it suits Kirby, and I certainly don't think it suits Jerry.
I definitely agree it doesn't suit Jerry. He's more of a physical press man corner. With Kirby, he is more of a zone guy, but it's single high stuff. It's asking him to do the split shell stuff that we do at times, which obviously makes sense because that's where Glenn comes from. He's a split shell guy, but we have moved to a bit more to the sort of cover ones or cover threes. He does do well as that sort of single high, but then yeah, it's running the man coverage with that. When you put him in sort of zone and he's sort of having to shade one way, because the teams know they can pick us apart in zone anyway, they're just throwing it the opposite end and it just makes him have to pick decisions and it's just opening it up. Cam, it kind of does suit him a bit more because he's not really he's physical, but it's not really like a Jerry physicality. He doesn't have speed and he's more cerebral. But we've seen the sort of the two extremes now where the first couple of years we were playing a lot of man because that's the holdover from he who must not be named kind of scheme. We had the players to fit that. We brought in Cam, we brought in Mosley. We adjusted to zone because we were playing too much man and we're getting torn apart with that. And it's just gone the other way now where we're just playing it too much. Players that the teams can just run zone beaters against us again and again. And then the occasional times we do play man because the defense has already got tired out and because half the time they've got a wide receiver who just matches up well against Jerry because as much as we love him, he can't flip his hips in coverage and he doesn't have top-end speed. So when he goes up against a DK Metcalf, who does have that top-end speed, he gets burnt. When he goes up against a Tyler Lockett, he gets burnt because he can't flip his hips. When he's against Keenan Allen, who's one of the best route runners in the league, he gets burnt. When he goes up against Christian Watson, who has top-end speed, not exactly JMO or Tyreek speed, but he's still pretty quick, and he can flip his hips in when running routes, he gets burnt. It's just we're not putting Jerry in the right positions where he is kind of that sort of Cam Sutton kind of guy in the opposite end, where they're both CB2s, but Jerry's more sort of like your physical guy, while Cam's your more cerebral ones. We do need a true cornerback once, which is why in the next couple of months, you're probably going to hear a lot from me, from Tom, from Ryan, from Ant about the cornerbacks in this draft, because we're going to need to know about them.
Yeah, I think there's 2 points for me just on this sort of coaching. First of all, I think Anzalone has done a really good job of shoring up the run defense in terms of communication, being the leader on the field, being the communicator. And Anzalone's had a good year, and I think the run defense improvement has been a big chunk of that has been down to him. But I think since CJ got injured and hasn't been there, the communication has gone from the backfield. It doesn't feel like we've got a natural leader in the backfield. And I think CJ's been a miss as a player, but I think also as a leader on the field. But in terms of coaching, just going back to, you know, whenever we face a mobile quarterback, it always feels it takes us three quarters to readjust. And that's on Aaron Glenn. And, you know, whenever the offense finds a crease, again, that's on Aaron Glenn, because it always feels like it's two, three quarters before he makes the adjustment. So I think those are the two big things that are holding us back. And the fact that we're not seeing the improvement in play. And like I said, I thought that this would be an NFL level breakout year for Kirby, and it hasn't been. And I do not doubt, like, the issue is not with effort. Like, at times during the Patricia era, and maybe even in Campbell's first year, there was players on the pitch that looked like they were strolling at times. And I absolutely do not think that's the case now. Like, people are putting a shift in. No one is not working hard, and I'm sure no one's not working hard in training. But this is about coaching and focus and technique. And that's why it's really worrying that players like Kirby just like aren't coming on and developing in the way. And, you know, if you look at the non-Hutch side of our edge rushing core, you know, where's Romeo Okwara? What impact's he making? Kaminsky was really good last year. He seems to have regressed. Charles Harris, again, like, there's just not that improvement that you'd want to see.
Yeah, I had defensive line lack of pressure and sack woes. I mean, I don't know how many games it's been and how many sacks we've had, but it feels like maybe one in the last three games or so. I don't know if we have many on fields, actually, but it doesn't feel like we've had many. I'm sure, yeah. Ash will have a look.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
I'll come back to you on that in just a second. But the other thing I had to mention before we hand out some cigars and subpars is just to talk about the offensive line. And I mean, Rashawn Gary obviously had himself a day. But, you know, I highlighted in the pregame that the Green Bay Packers had this guy, Carl Brooks, who's a rookie sixth rounder, who's had himself a heck of a year, went 181 in this year's draft. And he's not setting the world alight, but for a sixth round guy who's played a reasonable number of snaps for the Packers, he was grading like 60, 65, which is good. That was pretty good. And then he comes in with a 91.5 grade today, yesterday, five pressures. He had the strip fumble, you know, in the interior line, when you've got him and then you've got Gary on the outside, it's what we hope to have with Hutch and McNeil, but they just executed brilliantly. So What is it about this offensive line? Why have they regressed? I mean, as a unit, maybe bar Saul, they all seemingly not playing as well as they should be.
For me, and I'm going to give them a pass, I think this was just a blip, because they have been so solid. I think Jonah Jackson is a bigger miss than maybe we anticipate. I thought Glasgow had maybe one of his worst games. I think Glasgow's been great since he's back, but he seemed to really struggle. And obviously, Colby's just not quite there yet.
I mean, Colby graded significantly better than KOD. So, I mean, I don't know what the team are going to see when they look at that. But Glasgow and our Seeker both had significantly worse grades than Solstall. So I know that Solstall's going to get the headlines for the benching, but the guys in his position played worse than he did, apparently. And that's what I saw too. I mean, there were a couple of reps on the rewatch where I saw Glasgow get swum within half a second of the snap. Like, they were by him. And I'm like, I didn't realise that as a PFF top 10 guard in the NFL, this was allowed to happen. Like, Graham just was awful. We had a 2.2 pass blocking grade.
Ooh.
Which Ew. Is spectacularly bad. But there we go. Okay. Ash, did you have the sack total in the last few games?
So in the last three games, we've had two sacks, both of which came last week against the Bears, one for Aleem, one for Hutch. Not exactly great.
It's not good enough.
Romeo Okwara, what is going on with Romeo Okwara?
So I think Romeo's been the best of the bunch that you mentioned, including Pascal. I think Romeo's been better than any of those guys because he's actually been holding his own against the run and he's got a little bit of pressure. But
how much have we paid him? How much have we paid him?
He took a pay cut. He's on $4 million.
Romeo Okwara. I was going to say, but in terms of him, the reason he's probably not performing as well is because I hate to lump it onto him, but because it's the ACL and because he's an older guy and he's a big boy, it's just harder for him to come back and he's just lost that physicality which was there for him.
He's on $2 million.
It's on, yeah. Where's
Charles Harris?
Charles Harris is probably the same. Charles, he also took a pay cut.
Charles Harris is on. Okay, so his deal was slightly weirder. So he took a pay cut, but he also moved some into the future. His number is $7 million, with $2 million being next year and $5 million being this year. So I would say Romeo is much better on $2 million.
But I mean, outside of Hutch and McNeil, I'm not seeing very much. That's the kind of point I'm making from the rest of the. I thought Pascal was pretty decent.
Pascal was great.
He's coming.
Yeah, he's coming. Yeah. Give us a second. We're going to mention him in just a minute.
I'm just looking now.
I've just seen in chat that Brent DeWitt is now officially on the Steve train about AG. Get in there Brent. Get on the Steve train.
Okay, so Aiden and Aleem are top two pressure getters. With Aiden with 63, Aleem with 30. Who is third in the team?
Derek Barnes?
Not Derek.
Sorry, I missed the question because I'm going to correct myself with Romeo. He reduced his salary to $2 million, but he already had prorated bonuses of $3.5 million he couldn't get rid of. So he's on the books for $5.5 million. But he reduced his salary from 11 to 2. So that, I just wanted to make that clear. Sorry, Ash, question again?
So the question was, obviously, Aiden and Aleem are top two pressure getters on the team. Who's third?
I have looked at this recently, but I should know this, but I don't know why I don't. I'm going to guess Bugs. He's hardly played as well.
Bugs is tied 11th.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
It's an edge player. It's an edge player. It says a lot that we're not saying who it is because it's not standing out, but also it kind of goes into, to give you a clue, it buys into the meme of this player.
Judy Aquara?
Aquara? Nope, he's 10th.
Who is it? Go on.
The guy nobody ever talks about, Kamish. 24 pressures. Charles is a 4 for 23. Then 5th is Alex Anzalone with his 15 pressures off blitzes. The fact that a linebacker who's only been blitzing like the past 3-4 games is already 5th on the team in pressures. And yet, there's also a massive gulf as well between 1 and 2 with Aiden with 63 instead. Aleem with 30.
Yeah.
Aiden is putting a big boy numbers, yet he just has no help. He's really going into sort of the Max Crosby position of edge rushers.
Okay, so you guys are bigger X's and O guys than me. So riddle me how. I'm watching Hutch come off his block, beating the first man, swimming past the second guy, and there's a third guy stood right there in the middle. So Hutch is getting pressures and getting double and triple teamed. Aleem's finding pressure up the middle. So what are the rest of the guys doing? Like, surely they're going to be in one-on-ones.
Oh, they are, and they're not winning them.
Yeah.
Or if they are winning them, they're not winning them quick enough.
Yeah. So the whole front defensive front scheme as well is designed to get Aiden a one-on-one. The whole point is whoever's playing the one tech is supposed to be double teamed. That's the entire point of how our front's set up. But because whoever's playing the one tech has been so ineffective, that basically can be single teamed, which means Aleem can get can either get double teamed on the same play or Aiden does, and then they're just keeping a tight end or running back as well to block Aiden, and that's her entire pressure negated, and they can just pass for whatever.
The other side to this is that other teams basically do what we're doing, and they do get pressure from these other guys because our guys are getting pressure. Demonstrably, Kaminsky has 20 something pressures.
24.
24. And other guys have pressures as well. Romeo has some pressures, Julian has some pressures, Charles has some pressures, just not many. But they are there. But they're not getting home. And the reason why they're not getting home is because the coverage isn't lasting long enough for them to do it. So all Jordan Love has to do is move one step to the left and buys himself a second so we can throw the ball. Whereas if he has to actually hold it for 2 or 3 seconds longer because the coverage is tight, then maybe the sack gets there. But because our coverage is breaking down, even in a pressured situation, quarterbacks are still managing to either break out the pocket because they can see in a scramble drill where someone's going to be free, or they're just throwing it before they get home. So on both sides, they're not, the defensive line isn't getting there quick enough to bail the coverage out, and the coverage isn't holding them long enough for the defensive line to get home. It's exactly the opposite of what the Packers did to us yesterday. It's crap. Final part of this, before we have a couple of questions, because I promised Steve we'd get out of Dodge quickly, is cigars and subpars. Obviously more subpars than cigars, but nice to highlight maybe some players who did play well, if you can pick out any. Steve, who you got?
Malcolm Rodriguez. love to see him making a reception. That was my smile during 3 hours of torment. A Malcolm catch. And like, good hands.
Ash?
The meme continues, hey guys that watch this. This is like the sixth week in a row that I think, oh yeah, I'm being sneaky, picking a guy. I even said so much yesterday to Matt. I was like, yeah, with that catch, I'm probably going to mention Rodrigo tomorrow, but someone will take him. So I'm going to go for the guy we just mentioned a minute ago, Pascal. Like, okay, didn't really, he only got 2 pressures on the day. But he was damn good holding the edge on some of those AJ on some of those runs. Like that, he was doing what we kind of expected him to do when we drafted him last year, with the capability of building up that pass rush. It's just now he's got that down. He's got the 70. He's got the nearly 80 grade in run defense. He now has to work on that pass rush, and if that means moving him more to the interior to play that sort of free tech role on passing downs to get him those matchups. The coaching staff need to start doing that because he's got the build for it to at least do it on passing downs. He's shown that he's got the sort of capability now to play to NFL standard after overcoming the sports hernia and the ankle injury from last year. It's time to start using him more now.
I'm going to be greedy and pick two and then send it round to you guys for another one if you want to have one. First one is Khalif Raymond, only because he's my guy, and I've been calling for this sort of performance every bloody week. When you get him involved in that sort of game, he performs, he's super reliable, and he got chunk plays when we needed it. 20 yards here, 25 yards there. Just do it when the game ain't already gone, and do it more consistently, just like with J-Mo, because they've both proven that they can run routes, they can catch balls and get plenty of yak for you. I want to see Ben Johnson use them more, because the play calling, I think, generally from Ben has been good. But I think there's more that can be extracted from this. And maybe he's keeping them in the pocket, but why not just exploit it again and again and again? Like, we've got so many weapons, you can't cover them all. So just use them all, because a team can't scheme up for 5 or 6 weapons at a time. Teams aren't built like that. The second one is Jack Campbell. Comfortably his best game. Like, it was night and day compared to the Chicago game. Chicago game missed lots of tackles early on, kind of came good fourth quarter to get us back in the game with a couple of key stops. But in this game, I don't think he had any missed tackles. He didn't have any missed tackles. He had three tackles total. One was a stop. He had one reception given up for 5 yards. But generally speaking, I thought he was tight in coverage. I thought he was disciplined. I thought he made good stops. This is what we expect to see out of him when we drafted him. And I know linebacker is a tough spot to translate into. This could just be him kind of growing into the role a bit. But in a game where pretty much everyone else around him felt a shit, he was a small shining light for me.
His tackling was much better. Like the tackles he did get were some solid tackles.
Any other ones you guys want to point out, or any shade you want to throw at anyone that we haven't already?
I mean, it's partly shade, but also partly a positive. Khalil Dorsey on the kick returns. Like, okay, yeah, he shouldn't return some of them, but he actually got yardage on them. Like, I don't think many of them, he got tackled before the 25, so it was like a net gain.
Yeah, it was.
Maybe still was a dumb decision too, but at least he made it work. While in the past couple of weeks, we've seen the kicks be returned and us be tackled at the 10, and we're like, oh, for fuck's sake, right, here we go. 90-yard drive. We know we're going to stall out here. This ain't good.
Anyone else, Steve-O? Nah, all right.
No.
That's cool. We got two questions from Mike the Marine, and then we're going to close the show. First off, he said, offense was out of sync with new three tight end split wide formation for majority of the game. Don't you think it messed up quarterback timing and limitations? It seemed like too much of a short week to implement this. Seemed like a big shift. There seemed to be a lot more three tight end sets. And Ash, we were noticing this, that they were in that, I call it arrow formation, but what's it called?
Yeah. I think it's called a wishbone, but a sort of like a sort of wishbony free back. Yeah. It's usually a free back system that's in triple option, but Dan Skipper and Brock Wright coming in as wide running backs, and then suddenly they would always split back out to be like in like tight ends. Though we won't really do anything fancy from it.
Sometimes, so they took one snap, which was the first two point conversion. Yep. They stayed in that formation and ran out of it. But otherwise, the first one, they both split out to the right-hand side. The second one, they split to the left. And then the third one, they split out separately. And I was just like, is this a matchup thing? Like, are you trying to screw them up somehow? I don't get it. But
partly probably setting something up where we'll do it in a couple of weeks. And Sam Laporte will be one of them. He'll go up into like one of those positions and then run a route and go for a big play. But at the same time, as I kept saying, I'm all for setting stuff up for like in the future weeks. But at the same time, you've also got to bear this week in mind. Like if shit's going down the creek without a paddle, stop setting up stuff for next week. Just focus on this week.
Yeah,
that was a Ryan McCluskey metaphor.
I'm trying to make up for him not being here.
I can't remember. I think it was on the Sam Laporta red zone catch that he made that Brock Wright was completely open, like wide open, not even covered. So, you know, that scheme obviously does have some benefits. We've seen Brock Wright get open before. I kind of wish they'd used Brock Wright a bit more.
And James Mitchell. He was so good last year. Did not drop a target, every single one of his targets. Yet he's been non-existent this year.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if he's had more than one target, to be honest. James Mitchell in the entire season. Final question from Mike was, it was more about defense and about coaching, but putting players in the right positions and specifics. So I'll put it to you and see what you think. He says, defense is putting players in different situations. Branch should be closer to the line, not deep. Joseph placed in deep middle to cover both sides. Sutton and Jacobs not having safety support. Campbell should stay in the middle and not go to the edge. I agree we have issues with coaching and not adjusting until it's too late. Specifically, do you think they're putting the players in the right place? Because some of these decisions are questionable and some of them I kind of like. Like, with Campbell's physicality, with his speed, I want to see him on the edge a little bit because it's about you can still drop from that position. You don't have to blitz out of that. And it's about trying to screw them up. And like, this is what I'm calling for from Aaron Glenn. It's like, okay, walk him up to the line, but then walk him back or blitz him. Just don't let them know what you're doing. If he's always playing in the middle, it's kind of a bit more predictable. So on that one, I'm going to go with it. But Branch has played a bit more deep safety recently, and Sutton and Jacobs, we are kind of putting on an island a little bit more than seemingly we should. Do you think they could be doing more to to put players in positions where they're comfortable.
Maybe, yeah. So I'm actually going to disagree with the Campbell take. Like, I know he's supposed to be an intelligent linebacker and that, but linebacker is the hardest position to pick up on defense coming from college to NFL. We've seen it with other highly taken linebackers. Patrick Queen for the Ravens, for example. It takes a while to pick up. So us having to, I know it was due to necessity through James Houston having an unfortunate injury and then Julian not being quite ready yet. But we fucked up his development by doing that to him because he's suddenly having to go from learning one position to learning another one. It's now being pucked at off ball. We've kind of stunted his development. We should have stick with it. What we should have done is put Barnes there. As we keep reiterating week after week, he is a former edge rusher at Purdue. If you're going to do it with anyone, leave Campbell at linebacker to learn and get up to speed there. Put Barnes there because he's finally, Barnes has got the light click on for light off ball now. You can start building up his role, kind of like how we were supposed to be doing with Houston this year. He's really good at linebacker, like edge rusher, third down, great. So start putting him on run defense, mixing a couple of coverage stuff, build up his role that way. For Campbell, stunted his growth, keep him off ball. If we're going to do it with Barnes, maybe Anzalone, but yeah, mix up the looks as well. Don't just constantly blitz, blitz, blitz or drop back because otherwise it's going to get predictable. That's what's happened with Campbell. With Kirby, yeah, mix in a couple of split safety looks, but at the same time, he is best as a single high safety, so you don't want to be putting him in a situation where he's having to play a lot of run defense and tackle because, to be honest, those are his weaknesses. He's really good at coverage when you allow him to be, but if he's having to start playing the run a lot and tackle, he's not so good on taking angles yet. He's still got to learn that. That was an issue of his coming out of Illinois, and it's something he still has to work on now. But yeah, just I don't know how else to help the corners other than just getting that pressure. That's what, again, it all comes to. You've got to have that marriage of goodness between the coverage and the pass rush because the corners can't cover for 5-6 seconds. And if the corners can't cover, the pass rush don't have us. Just it, you have to have that marriage, and for both for that reason, it's just not working right now.
Yeah, I think 2 points for me. First of all, like, you know, don't put baby in the corner and don't put Jerry on an island. Those are two absolute givens. And secondly, I think Branch is wasted playing too close to the line. I think Branch has got a pick in him. Like, I really think he is a danger man. And he's a guy that's going to make plays. So I wouldn't necessarily, I would move him around like a complete defensive chess piece, like make him the X factor in our defense, because he's going to be the natural heir to CJ when CJ moves on in, you know, 1, 2, 3 seasons. Branch is a long-term player, and let's like really let him flourish. Can I just ask a question? I saw someone mention it in the chat. What was Levi's snap counts, and did anyone spot anything with Levi?
Seven snaps.
I spied him on one.
Yeah, 7 snaps, 61.4 grade, 1 tackle, 1 stop. Didn't really do much. So in the DT plays, Quinton Bohanna had 22 snaps and had a 36.8 grade. Benito Jones had 22 snaps, had a 63.5 grade. Aleem had 45 snaps, 67.9 grade. And then in the interior as well was John Kaminsky, who played out of his 23 snaps. He played 15 inside. And he had a 68.5 grade. So those are all the interior guys. Pascal played 6 snaps inside, 23 out. So he's still working his way back. I mean, at this point, we thought he'd be medically retired or cut. So 7 snaps is 7 snaps more than I thought he'd get. And to be honest, I'm still not willing to cut him for Bohanna, who frankly has had one good play and otherwise has looked okay. But I don't see him as a long-term piece. So,
yeah, I just really like to know what's going on with Bugs, because I'd rather see Bugs on the field than Bohanna.
Yeah, I mean,
behind the scenes drama is the best way to sum it up, probably.
I don't even know if there has been. I question it massively. Like, we hear rumblings coming from people about potential for this and that. If there was a problem that was legitimately a problem that meant that he wasn't playing for the team, he's in the final year of his deal, he'd be cut already. Like, it wouldn't be an issue. They wouldn't let that become a locker room problem. So I genuinely think that he's kind of had maybe a tiniest bit of a moan, which has been blown up into this big thing. And otherwise, he's literally just been ill. Like, he has actually just been ill. We heard, oh, there's something really big going to drop on this on Monday last week after the, Monday this week after the game when he wasn't playing against the Bears, and nothing came. And these people keep prophesizing things that never come to pass. And I'm here for it. As a content creator, put your word out there, your best foot forward, because you think something's going to happen. You genuinely believe it. But more often than not, it's smoke without fire. I don't want to throw shade at anyone in particular, because I'm really here for that sort of content, because people lap it up and it's good fun. You're not meant to take it too seriously, but then people do take it seriously and it's a shame. Like, yeah, there's no evidence that Bugs has anything other than just being ill.
I don't know if anyone sees anything, stick it in our WhatsApp chat, but I want to know what was up with Kirby, because the couple of clips I saw him going nuts, someone said in the chat, I can't remember who it was in the chat, they said that CJ was having to calm him down. She's like kind of like
a role reversal. Having quickly gone and searched it, I think it was for one of the big plays we gave up, and he felt like he was put in a bad position by basically the corners and the linebackers, because they were just, he was playing single high as he usually does, and he was in a good position, but because the corner and the linebacker just went off with their alignments, they just were, so I think the linebacker was too far forward and the corner gave the receiver inside leverage. It just brought him into Kirby's zone and gave up a big play. And he was like, what the fuck are you doing? But it's probably that. It's probably just tension just spilling over as well, because obviously we've been giving up big plays and he's probably going to get the brunt of it as the guy who is the sort of last line of defense. It's just tension's boiling over. Hopefully it's something that could be calmed down, because you say I hate putting like sort of the burden of this on him, but at the same time, I can see it happening if things go well for him. He could be like Earl Thomas. He has that potential in him. Obviously, without the off-field stuff, like, I hope like in 10 years' time, we don't see that Kirby's like ex-wife is robbing him and posting it with his boyfriend and all that. Don't wish that on him at all. But in terms of on-field performance, as like
we know potential what you mean,
to
Ash.
Get there. Yeah. I know. It's because I can see Matt giggling. I was like, I have to quickly qualify.
No. I'm giggling because of Joshua Mercer's comment, and I'm going to use this to end the show. He made a comment before about one of the cats being naked, because I presume it's some sort of like Persian or something.
Olivier's a Sphinx, yeah.
Okay, so he said, can we get Ash to put on a bold cap and recite the $1 million scene from Austin Powers, which I am absolutely here for. Right.
I will... end of season show.
Oh, God. I didn't want you to respond to that, because no. But there we go.
You know me too well.
I do.
Can I ask two very quick questions?
Go on, then.
Bears against the Vikings. I think it's on Monday Night Football. What's prediction of score?
28-17 to the Vikings.
33-30 Bears.
Ooh.
I just don't buy. So both teams match up quite well against each other. And I think it's going to explode for points. I mean, heavy blitz against Fields might work. So we'll see what happens. But I also feel like Fields is playing well enough to pick it apart.
They really telegraph the blitzes as well.
And DJ Moore's having himself a day, and we got Darnell Mooney going a bit. Komet's on a tear. They've got four running backs to take account of. Like, I feel like that Bears offense has actually started doing something, and the Vikings defense, I'm just not sure about. And then Vikings offense have got something too. So I think high scoring.
And secondly, New Orleans Saints on the road. How worried are we?
Not
four out of ten. Four out of ten, but that's actually more for us than them. Like, I know they've got Crystal Arvin, they've got Alvin Kamara, but it's more we're gonna shoot ourselves in the foot again. Kind of like how Tua's just shot himself in the foot by throwing a pick six for the Dolphins.
Hey, yeah. Lovely. Excellent. Love it. Good stuff. Right. What about you, Steve? What do you think?
So I think the Saints are playing the Falcons on Sunday, and I'll maybe watch that game. I mean, the Saints have just looked very ragged, and I don't like. I used to love watching Kamara, but I mean, he's been so kind of like bang average. I think Michael Thomas is on IR now. So I'm not really worried about the Saints' offense. It's more their defense I'm kind of worried about, particularly like, you know, the Saints, yeah, the crowd's normally up for it. So I think it's going to be a, I think it's going to be a good comeback game test, but it's one that I absolutely, if we want to have like some sort of heart attack end to the season where we barely scrape the playoffs, then let's lose to New Orleans. That's exactly what we need to do. But I'm pretty confident that we've got enough to get past them. It's the last four games that I'm more worried about.
I know that, well, I believe that you know that I'm not a superstitious person. So when I say this and speak it into existence, just know that I do not care. Do you remember the season where we were 9 wins and 4 losses in week 14? And our last 3 games, we lost consecutively to not win the division and then ended up losing the wild card. I reckon that was
2016.
With the 8 comebacks.
Stafford was kind of like crippled, I think. I can't remember if he was playing through injury or actually out for a couple of those games.
It was 2016. It was losses to New York at the Giants, at the Cowboys, at home to the Packers, and then at Seattle, the playoffs.
Yeah, so the Packers was to win the division against the Packers, and we lost. I thought we'd win 13 games still before yesterday. And now I'm coming into this thinking maybe there is legit cause for concern. This is the first time my confidence has slightly wavered. And now I'm questioning whether we get 11, which is just rough. But the thing is, the NFC is so bad that I kind of think 9 or 10 wins is going to get the wild card spot anyway. But if we don't win the division, it's disaster territory at this point. So.
And we've already seen about 3 iterations of the Vikings this season.
Yeah.
So give it another 3-4 weeks. And what iteration of the Vikings are they going to be on by then? I mean, so inconsistent.
Which quarterback have they brought in from free agency? Because Dobbs gets himself on IR through concussion or something. With the way he runs, Gordon, I can see it happening.
Gordon Tamu. God, I was going to say, you were saying, I thought you were bringing up the 2016 season because that's the season we played the Saints at home.
Oh, no. No.
28-13. And okay, we scored 2 touchdowns and they scored 1 as well. So we had a Theoretic receiving touchdown and a Golden Tate one for 66 yards. They had a 1-yard fullback run by John Kuhn. Every other score was a field goal. If that happens on Sunday, God help us.
Yeah, right.
Theo Riddick. Wow.
Right, we're going to close the show there. Saints preview is on Thursday. I want to talk to our Saints content creator about coming on and previewing them. It's going to be a good show either way. College Football Podcast, I realize it's not up on YouTube at the moment, but I'm going to try and get it up there as soon as possible. Otherwise, enjoy the games this weekend. Have a good little mini bye. We need to get ourselves refreshed and then hit the ground running again. Find us on Real Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And the group on Facebook for worldwide fans is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Private Wide. On the website, the article's at rotluk.com. Please subscribe, rate us 5 stars, like, all that good stuff. You know what to do, Steve, with the mug in the store and what have you. All of that's great stuff. Thank you to everyone in the chat for being great, as always. We'll see you next week. Boys, thank you for being my therapy session in this one once again. For now, let's go Lions one. Sorry?
I feel a bit better.
Good. I'm glad to hear it, Steve. Cheers, Steve and Ash. I'm Matt. Let's go Lions one pride.
Fuck those Packers.